For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
The Texans season has come to an end in the divisional round. Who would have thought? We're going to talk about all that and more on this edition of the Bullpen. Hello and welcome to the Bullpen. As always, I am James Roy, and with me is Tom Chevrier. Tom, how are you doing?
You know, a day later, I'm better. I mean, right after the game, not great. You know, definitely felt like there was opportunities. We're going to get into it. Definitely felt like this. The gap is not as big as some people made it out to be between Kansas City and Houston. I really think this team is really close. A day later, you know, hope springs eternal. I'm already looking towards, you know, a draft and an offseason, which I think, you know, with the right moves in the right directions, I really feel like this team could be every bit as dangerous the following season and even make the next step.
Yeah, I mean, I thought going into the game that I might have a more visceral reaction, but after watching what the Texans put on the field and kind of like processing it as it happened, I was surprised to find that, you know, I was a little more, I don't want to say mellowed out, but like I think I did a better job of reeling in my expectations. I think I learned from like early in the season and like the overreactions one way or another. And I just kind of like committed to myself before the game. I was like, you know, this is going to be a good game, I think. And, you know, if the Texans win, they do. If they don't, you know, I'll always have opinions on what happened and why they didn't win. But like, I don't think this one's going to like, you know, make me hurt in the way that some Texans losses have in the past. I don't know if I've ever told this story, but like back like when I was really young, the Texans, like the first time that they were really legitimately supposed to be good when they had Matt Schaub, played the Titans on Monday Night Football. And I remember watching that game and the Texans were heavy favorites going into it. And I was like, I'm putting every egg in this basket. The Texans will make the playoffs for the first time this year. And it was like early in the season, and they went in there and just absolutely did not show up. I don't think it was Monday. It might have been Sunday Night Football, but either way, it was a long time ago. And I remember going into my room and I had a very emotional reaction to that game. And I think I told myself moving forward from there that I was going to try my best to keep it in check because it couldn't be that serious. I've not had that bad of a reaction to a game since. So, but Tom would probably guess that I'm overreact a little bit. I think we've had out that conversation a few times, but I am better than I've been in the past. And I think that this, honestly, it was a step in my maturity I'm approaching 30 years old. So I think it's about time that I just was able to be like, okay, we didn't win, gave it our best, on to the off season. And I mean, honestly, if we're being real, I think I've said this before, like the fun of like guessing who the Texans are going to draft and like going through draft season and free agency has always been something that I've loved about being a fan of football in general. So I'm in for a fun season, even though I'd rather still be talking about, you know, the Texans playing football, since that is obviously the best part of being a Texans fan. But anyway, let's get into this game. Let's talk about it. Let's get out the shovel, throw some dirt on this season and move on. The Texans go into Arrowhead and look pretty good early on. I honestly, a lot of people that I know I'm a Texans fan came up to me and said, wow, you know, early on, I really thought the Texans had a chance. Like they kind of, and it's one of those moments you have early on in a game when you're watching where you go, wow, my team legitimately has a chance to win this game. Like I've been saying it all week, but like the way the Texans showed up early in that game, I was like, oh, like even with that kickoff, like it really had a chance. So that's what I want to start with. What do you think was the most impactful part of the, like, what do you think held the Texans back? And we're not going to talk about the officiating. I think both of us have kind of taken a stance that like, yeah, sure. I want to talk about what the Texans can control. And so there was two facets of the game in terms of what the Texans could control and what the refs did that affected scoring drastically enough to change the result in some people's minds. I want to talk about what the Texans could control. And that starts with, for me, special teams. But I want to know, do you think special teams was the most impactful, you know, detriment to this Texans team, or do you view it a different way?
That depends on your definition of special teams. If you include the place kicker in there, then absolutely special teams had a huge impact on this game. Obviously, it did not start well. Huge kickoff. I thought Chris Boyd made a horrible, horrible decision to, you know, remove his helmet and then, you know, not be able to control himself. And then from what we saw was attack his coach, which we later found out post-game that that's just the relationship that they have. I still can't have that. Like I tweeted out in the middle of the game, he should have been on a Greyhound bus to Houston, because regardless of what the scenario is, he has to be better than that. Like he has to know, I mean, this is not his first football game. He has to know that his helmet comes off in the middle of the field, it's 15 yards unless it's dislodged, which it was clearly not. He has to know that if he shoves his coach on national television, the whole world is going to take that some type of way. He has to know. And for me, it was just a bad look. You know, obviously, the city of Houston doesn't need any more negative PR than they already get. And this was just further negative PR. The head coaching system staff for the Houston Texans probably doesn't need any more negative PR than they already get. And this did not show a sense of control of your team, a sense of having them prepared. And, you know, it shows poorly on the coaching staff when you make boneheaded mistakes. And, you know, the people I talked to, they were quick to point out, like, the coaches have to have these guys better. And they wanted to put it on the coaches. For me, I think you got to hold those guys accountable. Chris Boyd's got to know what, you know, is at stake, got to know how to act. And, you know, he probably doesn't need to be a Texan next year, in my opinion. I could be wrong about that. Some people really like him. For me, I just can't, especially when all he contributes is on special teams.
Yeah. And there's this new trend, or not really new, but it's been since like the middle of the season, the weekly Chris Boyd penalty. I made a joke, and I don't know if I worded it quite this way, but what I intended by it was, you know, at least it happened then instead of in a more impactful moment. Because, like you said, I mean, it's at the end of a kickoff return that puts the Chiefs in field goal range. It puts them closer, but at the end of the day, the Texans defense stonewalled them. So the penalty was not quite as impactful as it could have been in that game. And we can assign 3 points to the special teams just on that alone, like giving up that kickoff return. Because if the defense stonewalls them on their own side of the field, then it's different. Granted, they probably called a different set of plays. They were pretty close to the end zone. So I'll give it that. We could go all day about what, you know, the nuance of if and what, you know, but we're not fans of, you know, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson, all the ifs, if you will, as they've been come to be known by. So I won't bore you with the ifs. But I think that special teams has been a pretty rock steady part of the game, and players like Chris Boyd, players like Dario Gumbawale, that mostly contribute on special teams are guys that have built their value on the roster based off of how great special teams has consistently shown up and been. So it was kind of, I don't want to say shocking, but it was frustrating to see that was probably, in my opinion, one of the larger impacts on the game and the negative side of things for the Texans was the special teams performance. And I do include place kicking. I think that you can put the 55-yard field goal attempt on coaching. Understanding the conditions that day, you punt that, I'd say, most times. I think the kick looked really bad, which puts something on Kiami, but Kiami should have been in a position to have his confidence so incredibly crushed by having to go out there and kick a 55-yard field goal in those conditions. So now, I mean, and that brings up a discussion, because you're looking at me like this. I kind of want to touch on this since I have it up, and I'm honestly pretty much done talking about special teams, at least in that regard. With that, I think the plight of being a kicker is highlighted by how the season's gone. You know, with Kiami breaking records at the beginning of the season, misses a couple extra points late, and, you know, has a couple of misses for important field goals for this team late in the season. And it goes from Kiami's the greatest of all time, you know, GOAT kicker, he'll be kicking for the Texans forever, to like, maybe we should look into moving on. Where do you stand on that spectrum? I want to hear your thoughts on that.
The Houston Texans need a kicker. And the reason being has nothing to do with the 55-yard kick. I understand the conditions. I understand that maybe you shouldn't kick those. However, if you told me that he was drilling them pregame warm-up, if he was good from 60 pregame warm-up in that direction, then the onus is on the kicker, because you've then instilled confidence in the coach that you can make that kick.
Is that what happened? Was it pregame warm-ups he was drilling that?
I don't know. That's the only thing I can assume. You know, like, Kaimi's been a good long-range field goal kicker. He's probably more accurate from longer distances than he is from closer. And that, for me, you know, really is probably what gave D'Amico the green light to go and try to tie the game up. I don't really necessarily feel like that kick is the one that I am going to like lay at the feet at why I think Kiami Fairbairn does not need to be the Houston Texans kicker. For me, it's the extra points. You cannot be an NFL kicker and miss extra points. Those things are so critical that the whole momentum swing of him missing that extra point, it just can't be understated. And for me, you missed a 55-yard kick. Conditions are trash. I get it. It happens. You missed an extra point after you made a field goal from longer recently. I can't. And then,
yeah, I don't like it either. I don't like it either. Here, you finish.
And then the other field goal, you know, it gets blocked, but it's a low kick. And it's like, dude, I can't defend it. I can't defend it. I really can't. So it sucks. It's from, to me, place kicking is the ultimate what have you done for me lately role. You are great until you're not. And it does not take very long for people. They came for Justin Tucker in Baltimore because he missed a couple kicks. And that's arguably one of the greatest kickers the NFL has ever seen. And I get it, because you're required so little. But when you are required, it's extra critical. So it's kind of a – you have to be okay with that. You have to know that my job only happens four times in a game, and I need to be absolutely perfect. And any misstep, I'm going to be graded more than the next guy because I don't have the opportunity to go over a long stretch of time.
I think that being a kicker is like being on the stock market. You like spend overtime building up your stock, and occasionally you take a hit. But like if you're really set and you take a setback, if you like got a million and you lose like 100,000, people are like, okay, that's a lot of money, but like, let's see, let's ride it out. You've done pretty good in the past. But, you know, and that's where Kiami's at. There's other kickers. Like we saw Rodrigo Blankenship, like for the Colts, and a few other kickers, even this season and last season, that had like been in the league for a year or two, had done pretty solid. And then they, you know, got hit with the yips, and then they were out within a week or two. Like, teams can't afford to have a place kicker they can't rely on. The Texans would know. The only reason that 2023 was a question on who was winning the division as late as it was because of poor place kicking when Kiami was out. I was at that game against the Jaguars and watched that bounce off the bottom upright right behind it. That was a heartbreaking thing to see. But to your point, I mean, I think it's worth bringing in competition for Kiami. I think that There has been other seasons where the Texans have done that and he's come out and won. And that could very well be the case. Like I think that I would be frustrated if the Texans just let Kiami be the kicker next season for no reason. But I would be okay if they, like, as they've done in the past, brought in other kickers and let them compete. Granted, there's some frustrations with that too. They brought in Jake Bates to compete with Kaimi, and then when they let him go, he went to Detroit, and he's been stellar as Detroit's kicker. So frustrating to say the least. That's all I have to say about that conversation. I don't really have – I'm not like a get Kaimi out of here kind of guy. That's not really my take on it. And maybe it comes from my loyalty to players that have been on the team. Maybe I give too much. But I think he's built up enough salt that he at least deserves the chance to fight for that job. I don't think that he should be cut this offseason for how he performed this season. I think he deserves that much. To speak to that, I mean, the 55-yard field goal, I think, is a total team failure that led to 7 points for the Chiefs. Between C.J. Stroud getting sacked on the play before to set up a really long field goal attempt, the decision to see that that long field goal attempt was there and say, maybe he can make it, and then give the Chiefs the ball in really good field position and then let them drive down the field and score, was just like a complete failure. I don't know if I can just put that on spot. I think that's more of a coaching failure, maybe 50-50 between player performance. You know, you look at what CJ did getting sacked. You look at how the offensive line performed, what the play was called. There's really just a complete breakdown there. So I'm just like trying to tally. So that to me puts it, you really just have to find 10 points on one side or the other to say we failed enough that we lost the game for ourselves. So with that I've found 10 points already just talking in terms of like the 3 points that were given up on the opening kickoff and then the 7 points that were given up by deciding to kick that field goal. So
I don't know how you can just say he's built up enough salt that you don't have to get him out of there, but then also say that he shouldn't have kicked the field goal. It's like you rooted, like you played both sides of that coin. Like
in the conditions. One minute. That wasn't like that was like, oh yeah, it's a slight breeze. Like there was some pretty strong winds, and the broadcast noted, oh, the winds are against him right now. Like that was a noted thing. Was it a bad kick? Yes. Does Kaimi have the leg to make that kick against the wind? Maybe. But I think that's like, I wasn't there. I'm not a weatherman. Like, I don't know. I'm just going based off what Troy Aikman and Joe Buck were talking about before and after that kick. I was like, man, what they were saying that. And if it's to be believed that the guys that were at the stadium thought, wow, the wind's blowing pretty heavy against you, do you send your kicker out for a 55-yard field goal? I'd send Kaimi out for a 60-yard field goal with no wind. But if there's like a strong wind against him, the range is less. He hit from around 50. So I don't know if 5 yards is that big of a difference, but I think it was enough with the wind against you that you contemplate maybe a quarterback punt. I don't know, like something to put the ball down the field and not give the Chiefs great field position.
So the wind wasn't in his face. It was left to right. Like, so that was the issue, is that it pushed it from left to right, not forward and back.
There it is, left to right.
I don't think he had an issue with the distance or the leg. I think he had the issue with the accuracy. In the same vein that he missed the extra point to the right, he just could not adjust for the fact that everything was pushing left to right.
Kaimi's been called a dome merchant. That's 100% a known fact. And it's also known, I mean, I've said it before, I think the Texans need to be a one seed to make their deep run in the playoffs. I've said it. I don't know if it's even possible to do it. I think that this Texans team can get up to that level. I just don't know, based off of going from 2023 to 2024 and seeing what, I mean, you could, right? Let's look at the Texans' schedule was tougher, and they made the same record and had the same results of the season, and were honestly a lot closer to moving on than they were against the Ravens the previous season. There was a lot of improvement. So with that steady amount of improvement, I'd say give it 2 or 3 years, the Texans could push for the one seed. That's the timeline I would put on it based off the improvement we've seen from the team.
So I've heard this argument a lot, and everybody's using the one seed, the one seed, the one seed. Everybody would have to come to Houston. I get that. Do you know who the one seed last year was?
It wasn't the Chiefs.
It wasn't the Chiefs. It was the Baltimore Ravens. You know what the Chiefs did? They went into Baltimore and beat them.
The Chiefs went into a similar environment to Arrowhead. That's like, you know, I don't think that's apples and oranges. The Texans need to play in their home stadium because it's in Houston. It's been said a lot, right? Like, what was it? when they moved the LA game, the commentators were talking about like, oh, one summer location to another. I don't think there's anyone complaining about this playoff game because it's going to be played in great conditions and both teams will have a pretty good shot at it. The Texans have shown drastically better in Houston. And the reason is what I know you don't like me making this. You don't agree with me on this. No. We're not in the same vein, but if the Texans play the Chiefs in Houston in that game, the Texans win. I have no doubt. I have no doubt in my mind that the Texans show up and win. And so, I don't even think it's necessarily because of the cold weather. I don't know if it's because of the wind. I just think the Texans play better at home, right? I think that those are factors that we can look at if we're trying to like make logic out of it. But like if we're talking just from like – this is like, you know – statistically, historically thing, which the Texans have shown to break historic trends anyways. They lost this game after outgaining the opponent by 100 yards and all these – what are these conditions? The teams were 49-0 doing what the Texans did before now, and now the Texans are the only team with that loss. The Texans are the only team to get 5 turnovers and not win a game or something like that. Like they broke a lot of bad records this season. So,
but that's the like, point I was going to make is that everybody talks about them needing to be in Houston to be able to win these games. I think they just need, like you spoke to, they just need the maturity to do it. I don't think they played poorly in Arrowhead. I don't think cold weather had anything to do with the fact that they couldn't win. Now, can Kaimi kick in outside of a dome? If he can't, that's a problem because you're not going to play every game in a dome. Not everyone's going to put a dome up. You have to be able to win games in the outdoors. You can't avoid that. If you want the one seed that everybody wants to say whatever, then you have to be able to go outside and win. And in the division, there's two outdoor fields. So you have to, you can't make the argument, well, you know, I can keep him because he kicks good in Houston, but if he kicks outside, we better play good enough.
I already said, like, I understand his weaknesses. I only bring it up because I think it's well known by everyone in the fan base at this point. And so if that's what the determination is, if that's what they're going on, if the Texans came out in the next month or so and the news broke that they cut Kaimi Fairbairn, and in the press conference after, Caserio was like, well, I doubt you'd ever say this, right? But if it got out or it was rumored that the Texans let him go because of his struggles outside, sure, valid. But I think that if you're going to look into cutting a guy like Kaimi, all-time leading franchise scorer, guy who's one of the 10 most accurate kickers in NFL history, at least last I checked, that could have changed just based off of the recent play. But if you're looking to cut a guy like that, he's not your run-of-the-mill Xander Bogaerts, I don't know, whatever. I'm just throwing out a random name, guy who could step off the street and kick a couple field goals for you. Like early on when Cameron Dicker signed with the Chargers and was like the undrafted guy who was filling in for, I believe it was Michael Bagley or something like that. You know, if he starts missing field goals, you go into the pool and you find a different guy until you get the right guy. But obviously he didn't start doing that and he's still employed by the Chargers. He's not built up enough salt to be invincible. I know he's well liked by the area and that team, but if next season he came out and laid an egg, I'd drop him as quick as possible if he just started missing. But Kaimi hasn't missed at that level. He's had some bad games. I'm not gonna deny it, but I'm still not gonna sway me from the he just needs some competition, and I'd buy him with the competition winning, especially if the guy can kick outside. That's fine by me. Moving into different grounds, I kind of want to talk about this from this perspective, right? Bobby Slowick interviewed with the Jets. I was making jokes all game. I was like, wow, Bobby obviously forgot the Jets were watching when he called that play, or I don't know, however you, whatever. But I, you know, it was far and in between. I felt like Bobby called a good game, and what I've realized is that Bobby's scheme is the issue. It's not play. I've never really thought it was play calling. I knew something was up. We've established my triangle of you know, my Bermuda triangle of Texans offensive wasted production that features, you know, Bobby Slowick, the offensive line, and CJ Stroud. I've put a lot of the blame on the offensive line in the past. I think that looking at the past few games and kind of, you know, combing through it and getting a lot more input on people from what the Shanahan scheme looks like and what the Texan scheme looks like specifically, I think I might place more blame on Bobby's scheme specifically than I do really on any other portion of that triangle. But looking at it from that perspective, right, this Texans offense went out, and I didn't feel like for most of the game they like weren't good. But there was a point where, like, how do I put it? There's that moment where the offense needs to step up. I know that the missed extra point kind of puts a damper on it, but it's an 8-point game when the Chiefs go down and score the touchdown following, right? You get the ball. To that point in the half, each team had had the ball one time, and we were in the fourth quarter deep enough that it was kind of like, okay, score now. You're not getting the ball back. Like, you may never. So the Texans played it that way, had the fourth down failure. I think that missed fourth down conversion, among other things, like there was more chances, but that kind of set it. I didn't like going for it on fourth and 10 in that situation. And I think it kind of set a tone of like, this team could get the ball 60 times and might not score, is kind of the vibe. That was, to me, the moment where the offensive vibe shifted. Like, to that point, the offense felt like it could put a play together, move the ball, wasn't like awful considering the competition. But I felt like when that fourth and 10 went down, the Texans had two more chances, I believe, on offense. And the second chance was really their most effective chance. Like, that was their, okay, we need to score right now. We got to get the ball in the end zone, go for two, tie it up kind of thing. What I want your thoughts on are this. What do you think of this Texans offensive game as a whole, and how much blame are you passing around in terms of what happened and when it all went south?
So I don't understand, like, the people that look at this game and then still want to come for Bobby Sloak's neck. I mean, has he made mistakes all season long and the offense has looked disjointed at period of time? Absolutely. But I don't think you have to look very far to realize that when everyone's doing what they're supposed to do, when you are getting CJ to check the ball down, when CJ's using his legs, I think you are seeing this offense look every bit as deadly as you thought it would be under Bobby Slowick. I do believe that while you say it's scheme, I think it's personnel. I think there are so many injuries that, you know, I think they take a toll, and you really hope that it doesn't. Next man up mentality, sure. But I don't think Dalton Schultz is Brevin Jordan, and I think that really hurts them. You look at what Bobby Slowick had in San Francisco with a dual threat. I can block all day, and I can go catch tight end in George Kittle. And Dalton Schultz isn't that. So when he calls these plays, he's asking for more from Dalton Schultz than I think Dalton Schultz can give him. And he needs a guy that looks more like Brevin Jordan. I really do. I feel like that is something that if he's able to hold a block for 2 seconds, you see plays happen. The fact that he is literally a sheet that guys just run through on a clothesline, that's what he is blocking. And I think if there was a better option for Bobby Slowick, he would use them. He just doesn't have it. And, you know, I did a post game with Robert Land, and he didn't like Dario Bungawale being the guy in pass block. And I don't either, but there is no one else coming through that door that's a better pass pro guy. And I think, you know, the tools that he had then in San Fran to run this offense that I think looked really good in San Fran, which had people excited, which looked really good last year, which had different guys, he doesn't have right now. So, you know, and we're not even talking about the wide receivers. There were plays that, you know, could have been made that could have extended drives. Hutch dropped the ball here or there. And if that's Diggs, it's probably a catch. You know, if it's Tank, it's probably a catch. And then the whole game kind of shifts a little bit. I think the fourth down play, to get all the way back to it, if we're being honest, it's on D'Amico Ryans, because it took entirely too long for them to make up their mind what they were going to do. And I don't think Bobby Slowick has the ability to say, hey, we're going for it on fourth down. You have to call that timeout. The fact that they didn't, nobody was on the same page except the defense, who was like, yo, just go eat. And that's exactly what they did. I can't blame them. CJ's got to throw the ball away. He can't take a 16-yard sack there. He just has to know that if I'm giving my team a chance, I have to preserve some of that field. He's taken sacks all year long that have put them in bad positions. And I love CJ Stroud. I feel like all of this is educational. He will learn. He will get better. You know 100%. What I mean?
I agree with you on that. Yeah. You can't take that sack. You can't. He's taken so many of those. I agree with you.
We have this huge, incredible high bar for CJ Stroud, and we want him to be great today. And I just watched Lamar Jackson in year seven, who's not won anything, take another L, and he's in year seven. And, you know, CJ's got 5 years between now and then. And I do believe he will get over that hump, but it's just so hard. And it's one of the toughest positions. And I think there are growing pains that come with that. You really need great support. I do believe the fact that, you know, his coaching tree is young with him, hurts him sometimes. You know, a veteran coach, a veteran offensive coordinator probably is able to settle him a little bit more and get into the right plays and get to where they need to go. We've been talking about that all season long. I think for me, I'm going to stick with the fact that the momentum shifted in that game when Kaimi misses the extra point. The Texans have this masterful 15-play, 10-minute drive that is everything you need. You get your defense off the field. You have worn their defense out, and you are an extra point from tying this game, where you feel like, look, a field goal, I can win it, and or whatever. All I need to stop. And then you miss the extra point, and it just lets all the air out of the balloon because I don't have the tie. You know what I mean? I have to score now. And then you get Kansas City comes down and you know, they do what they do. That's a really good football team. And anybody that doesn't think that's a good football team isn't paying attention. They're the two-time champs for a reason. And, you know, you have to play perfect football. And you can't give up points anywhere, like on your end. Like, they're going to score. But you have to make all your opportunities count to beat Kansas City, especially in their building. And that extra point for me was just everything, because you saw the energy. You saw everybody get up because Joe Mixon gallops into the end zone. And then in a blink, all the attitude changes. And you're like, well, got to go back to work. You know, job's not done. And it just felt like the mountain was still the mountain. You thought you got to the top. No, you're not to the top yet.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Yeah, I can see it. I mean, I don't agree that that's when the momentum changed, but I can see your point. I look back to the 2019 matchup, and I look back to the up 24-0. You trot out there, you're going to go for two. Wait, no, we're going to punt, and you punt the ball away. And there's the fake punt too. But in that moment, the indecisiveness, I think, was a momentum changer. Whereas here, the inability, the lack of maturity from the coaching to be like, hey, it's 4th and 10. The guys obviously aren't ready. Timeout needs to be called here and we can regroup, maybe punt it. I think a timeout and punt there prevents losing all that momentum. But I think that just forcing that play, it just kind of showed through. Cause like the Kymie Fairbairn mismatch point, don't get me wrong, it hurt. I don't know if at the end of the day it affected the result as bad as it could have, because at the end of the day, the Texans' offense never got them back into a position where it was like, oh, well, we went for two and missed it. We wouldn't have had to go for two if we had just made the extra point or something like that. We're not talking about it from that perspective. But I do agree it was an impactful play mentally. Now, when I look at the fourth down thing, like that was like, okay, now everyone in the stadium knows, like, because against the Chargers and against the Browns, the wild card D'Amico is crazy. And you look and he's on the sideline telling Christian Harris to go grab a pick. And he's over there. It feels like he's 10 steps ahead of the other coach. And I think that fourth down play was just a public proclamation from our sideline. Hey, D'Amico is in his second year of coaching. And like, this is a situation that a second year coach like may or may not get right. And he just didn't. And it drives things downhill. And it goes into my point about Bobby Sloak's scheme, because this was a moment that really shed a lot of light on something that I've been seeing, which is that when the Texans face that a blitzing team or a team that can creatively blitz or stunt, they tend to have trouble picking up those in their protections. Now, part of it, like you said, Dalton Schultz, not a blocking tight end. Three times that Karlaftis got a sack, it was when he was matched up with Dalton Schultz. That's a problem, right? So I'll acknowledge that. It felt like, so the next drive, right? Like I said, this was really the drive that was like, okay, it's still 20-12. The Texans can still drive down the field and win this game. And we have a three-play sequence on that drive where CJ drops back, sacked, and the offensive line looks like they didn't even show up. And that's when I was led into the fold on this on Twitter, and this kind of put it together for me, right? Because I've been asking my wife's asked the question, I think I spoke to that on here, about why we're not picking up blitzes. Like, why is there a man in the backfield as soon as CJ takes the snap more times than there should be? And I'm like, okay, well, shouldn't there be a way for CJ to account for this and call it out, like change the protection or do something? And it's something that maybe I should have known for longer, but like I learned it through the understanding of Shanahan's system, which is the same system that Slowick runs. So it's safe to assume that he probably does it this way. The center is in charge of calling out protections. Now the center right now is Jarrett Patterson, you know, fifth, sixth round pick. I can't remember which one it is from the draft before. He's played really good. He's blocked really well, but is it to say that there maybe is a need for a better center? Is it to say that maybe the problem this year, like the Texans drafted Juice Scruggs, and they draft him. He was part of the draft class where the trend was for the first like five rounds, the Texans just took team captains. And so maybe they, what some people would have called at the time and maybe still would call it now, reached on Juice Scruggs in the second round with other centers on the board that maybe other people liked better because he's a team captain and they felt like maybe he could handle calling out those protections. We didn't get to see a lot of him last year, and the guys that played center seemed to be serviceable. And then this season, now there's a difference. And another thing that's been pointed out to me is that it could really just be the O-line coach. Like maybe I'm pointing at Bobby, and maybe it's something where we should be pointing at Chris Strauss or other things. There's been rumors that the way he's coaching the offensive line has been called out by other coaches on staff as being super inadequate, and that D'Amico's just too nice of a guy to like tell him, hey, maybe don't do that. So all that to say, it felt like in that moment, like you could call it a skill issue. Maybe the offensive line just sucks, but in that moment, it felt like the scheme should have been able to account for the fact, like it's known. The commentators talked all game. I heard it 60 times on my TV. They said, oh, well, you know, when Spagnuolo going to release all the blitzes, he always knows the right time to run a blitz, and he's really crafty at running blitzes. And you know what Steve Spagnuolo does? He can cook up a mean blitz. And you would think that knowing that Spagnuolo's defense probably predicates a lot on crafty blitzes that are hard to pick up, that you'd be prepared on the most important drive of the game to pick up a blitz, knowing that was probably – he had been pretty light all game. I didn't feel like he, like, was just – bombarding the Texans with blitzes all games. At least it didn't feel like it because the offensive line was picking it up. But you would think the offensive line would be able to pick it up in the most vital moment of the game, and that's when it felt like it kind of fell apart. So that's my point when I frame the question with Bobby Slowick's scheme. That's like what I'm looking at. And so there's a number of things that could fix it, and there's a number to this point, I've been troubleshooting the Texans offense all season, trying to get down to the root cause. I've said several times what I think it is. And to this point, I'm still drilling down. And there's still, it just every time that you drill down on something, you say, that could be it. It then opens up Pandora's box of like a hundred other things that it could be. And I'm still narrowing it down. But I think that honestly, and we talked about this pre-stream or pre-recording, Bobby's probably going to be the coach or the OC next year. Like I've said that before. I don't think there's any reason to believe that the Texans would fire him based off of how they talked about him, based off of the vibe around the franchise. Would I like to see it? I mean, I don't know at this point. I think that a new scheme could be the difference. I think you look at what happened in Washington. Washington was not a good team last year. They picked really high. And then they drafted Jaden Daniels. They hired Cliff Kingsbury. And, you know, Dan Quinn did his fair share of work on the other side of the ball. But at the end of the day, that team is not a team that you would have thought did enough to turn around to being one step away from the Super Bowl. But now they have, more recently than the Texans have been in existence, made an NFC championship game. And I like their chances against the Eagles. I think that they could legitimately make a trip to the Super Bowl. So
did you watch that game against the Lions?
I caught some of it. I was in and out. It was pretty back and forth. But why? Yeah, why do you ask me that?
Because the offensive line is fantastic. Like, Stresson's made a comment about like all the other offensive lines. They afford their quarterback a lot of time. Now you talked about that fateful drive that you feel like killed the vibe and yada yada. And Spagnuolo and all the accolades that they put on him and all this stuff. This is not a disrespect to Steve Spagnuolo. He's a really good coach. He's got Super Bowl rings. I do not. But anybody and their mother could have called blitz on those plays because they were up by 8 points. You knew that the Texans had to throw the football because time was dwindling. That's not difficult. Like to say
and the Texans knew that. So was it a skill issue or was it the scheme?
Oh, it's 100% a skill issue. It's 100%. Like we just talked about a tight end that can't block and you're asking him to block and they're sending more guys than you can block. So it's 100% a skill issue. Like that's what it is. There's no play that Slowick could have called in that scenario that I think would have afforded him the opportunity to go down the field, which he needed to, and B, to block all the guys coming at him. It's set up for you to dink and dunk. CJ would have had to do something that he wouldn't have been comfortable doing in order to beat those blitzes and take the quick hot routes and take the checkdowns. But you don't need that because the end of the game is near. You need to get down the field in a hurry. So it's advantageous to the defense to put you in that position going, look, if you want to get rid of the ball quick, we'll live with it. But if you want to set a play that wants to go down the field, a long developing play, we're not going to give you the time because we're going to send more guys you can block.
Here's the reason why. So I don't know because I'm not fully set. I don't have the answer. That's why I ask it as a question of is it scheme or is it skill? And so I think with that, the Texans have to approach both. And so, and I think we've discussed, I mean, likely they'll fire the O-line coach. They'll maybe bring in some talent in the draft or through free agency, maybe make a minor adjustment to the offensive line. But if you get into this season and you've made some changes on both and we play, I give it five games. If we play five games and the offensive line fails, you either make the determination that it's Slowik and you fire him and install an entirely new offensive scheme in week five of the season, or you don't do anything. You, like we've established, you can't fix an offensive line in season. It's a daring mission to install a whole new offensive scheme in season, which means the Texans will probably just hire Gerard Johnson and have him run the same offensive scheme. Or maybe he'll make his adjustments, or I don't know. Like, I don't know what it looks like, but I think that I would be remiss to go into this offseason and think, I don't know which one it is, and then do very minor things to each, and then come into next season and be like, wow, I wonder why CJ doesn't have time to throw. Well, we got a new left guard who's pretty serviceable, and Shaq Mason is still out at right guard, and Jarrett Patterson's playing center, and we still got Titus and Laramie. And it's pretty much like the Texans did that last season. This was the season to not do anything in the offseason and see what happens. We're entering year three. I know there's lots of, it's just year two. So like, we got to see what I'm wondering what Nick saw. I'm wondering what D'Amico saw. And I'm wondering, because if the move is to fire the O-line coach, then that means that you think that the boys were poorly coached and that you're just going to grab depth pieces or potential developmental pieces just in case, and you run it back with a similar group, maybe try and grab a starting left guard in the draft or something. But like the thing that bothers me about it is that I don't like going into the off season, not specific, like maybe the Texans have it in mind, but in my mind, I'm still working through my thought process. I'm leaning towards scheme, but like it could be a skill issue. And even then, very few teams have turned around an offensive line by total reshuffle in one off season. Like you don't just like go into an offseason. The Chiefs kind of managed it, and they've made do with what they had. But that's to say they shuffled a group and changed out that had won a Super Bowl. Like they didn't like change out a group that was not winning in the divisional round. So
it's funny that you bring that up, because the guys on Sports Talk Radio here shortly after the game, they felt like a shakeup in the offensive line would be good, to include Laramie Tunsil. Because there's a lot of people.
That brings up a good question. You talk about Laramie. Everyone wants to trade him. And I want to ask this question out loud. I tried to draft a tweet about it. I couldn't get my thoughts straight on how to ask this question, but I want to talk to you about it. I'll ask this question first. Do you think the Texans really need the capital, the assets that they could get from Laramie Tunsil more than they need excellent left tackle play?
So it had nothing to do with the capital. It had nothing to do with the assets. It was more about the demeanor in which Laramie Tunsil plays. He's not a vocal dude. He's not a lead by example dude. He leads the league in penalties called, and he's one of the guys that's not a first guy in the door, last guy out. Like, he's not one of those guys.
And yet they keep voting him team leader or team captain.
Exactly, because he's the oldest dude in the locker room, or one of them. So don't get me wrong. I think for a lot of the things that he does well, he should be a leader on this team. However, is it enough to sacrifice your offensive line because you need him to really get everyone else on board? There has to be a leader there. And it can't be Jarrett Patterson. It can't be Juice Scruggs. That those guys have to get behind someone. It can't be Titus Howard either. They're moving him around from left guard to right tackle and back and forth. So it needs to be Laramie Tunsil. I think that line will only go as far as whoever is the leader of that line. And they make great points. I listened to that and I leaned up in my chair.
Did they make a point about who they're going to bring in to replace Tunsil?
Oh no, because that's impossible. You have no idea whether it be draft or trade or whatever.
Well, because for me, it just needs to be serviceable, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, you can't talk about replacing offensive linemen without talking about how some people have maybe made it a racial issue. Mm-hmm. I don't want to dive into that. I don't even know why I brought it up. So I'll just move past it and act like I didn't say it. But I think like there, maybe you come up with a serviceable left tackle that would have to be a veteran. I don't think this tackle draft class has a tackle. Even if they did, it's not available at 25. So you're giving up too much draft capital to move up for him. I don't think giving up Laremy Tunsil is enough to move up for him. I don't think adding Dalton Schultz to that deal is enough to move up for that guy.
Well, so here's the thing. You don't have to go draft a tackle. You have tackles. You have Blake Fisher, who a lot of people like and think that eventually he can be a dude. He's a left tackle by trade. You have Titus Howard, who is a right tackle, who wants to be a right tackle, who does not want to play left guard. And you, if you move Laremy Tunsil, then you fix the interior of that line. You get a veteran center, because clearly as much as Jared Patterson, and maybe Jared Patterson's the answer at left guard. Clearly as much as he's not a bad center, there's something to be said for if he's going to call the line, that it needs to be a veteran. I don't know that when he says something that Shaq Mason and Laremy Tunsil are taking it to heart. You know what I mean?
I see your point. I mean, I don't know. I'm not opposed to the idea of moving on from Laremy Tunsil from that perspective. The question that needs to be answered is who's coming in to replace him? Because that's always going to be the toughest part about moving on from a guy like that, because I'll take a first round pick, or I don't even know what his value is at this point, but at least we gave up two. I think we get one back. And there's probably a team picking ahead of us that might give us their first round pick to get a left tackle like Laremy Tunsil. The question just becomes who's replacing him. If it's Blake Fisher, cool. But that means that then would bring me to this. One, I want your thoughts on Shaq Mason continuing to play the whole game in spite of the fact that Juice Scruggs had played pretty well prior, and also watching Shaq Mason kind of, if we're calling it a skill issue, then you know Shaq Mason had quite a few skill issues throughout the game. And then what would your thoughts be if the Texans maybe push the Browns to get a hold of, I can't even remember his name, but he plays guard for the Browns. He's a pretty solid guy.
I would love it. I would love it. And if you're willing to move Laremy Tunsil, that's notice to the entire line that we're not playing, that everyone is on notice. Anyone can be replaced. There is no one above anyone in here. And see that dude, number 7, you better protect him with everything. And I think that's awesome. I think that line needs to quit lifting CJ up off the ground and keep him clean. And whatever you need to do, however you need to drive that message home, and nothing would be greater than say the dude that caused the most penalties on this line, we got to get him out. You know, yeah. I can't do it. And
I think it's fine. I mean, I like I said, I'm not opposed to the idea of moving Laremy Tunsil. I just need to know, and I think that maybe moving the leadership role interior, right, and then grabbing a center in the draft and then pushing Patterson out and having Scruggs as like a flex guard would be solid.
Well, for me, the center would be a veteran. He would not be a draft piece. You got young guys that play center that, you know, they're having a hard time with calling shifts and stuff. I need a dude at center who's been doing it for 4 or 5 years. That is elite for me.
I'm not opposed to the idea of a draft pick. Also not opposed to the idea of picking up a center in free agency. I just think, I don't know. And that gets to our point, which is that, you know, going into this offseason, until closer to free agency and knowing what the Texans are going to do there, it's going to be impossible to know what they're going to do in the draft. As much as all of, especially me, but as much as all of us are going to guess what the Texans do, it's mock draft season. I've already cooked up my first mock draft of the offseason. I'll be posting it shortly. Just kind of trying to get my feet wet, get a feel for. And trust me, there's going to be a lot of Texas players because there's just so many Texas. I could make a whole mock draft for the first 5 rounds and just pick players from Texas and be valid.
They're really good
for doing it. Because there's a lot of people. Gunnar Helm, you heard of him? Great second round pick if the Texans could pull the trigger on that, for sure. But yeah, I mean, I thought keeping Shaq Mason in there was a sign. We're not in the building. And I think Steph Stradley and Texans commenter had an exchange about how, you know, Texas commenter pointed out what I think all of us probably saw, which is Shaq Mason played because there's this unspoken loyalty to a guard that had not performed well enough this season to earn being back in over Scruggs after what Scruggs had done for the past couple weeks. And then Steph was like, well, you know, we don't know what's going on in that building. So maybe it was loyalty. Maybe they just had some sort of numbers or some sort of information or intel that showed that Shaq Mason was going to play particularly better in these conditions. You know, he was in New England, probably more used to the cold weather. However they saw it, they had something that told them that he should play. But I think that they spoke to it. There was a report that they were going to have him on a short leash and pull him. And I think that that time period, they looked at like the first two plays and said, he didn't get blown out, we're going to keep him in. And then they stopped looking at what he was doing because they never really intended to make that change. And it's unfortunate, since I don't want to say that could have been the difference, because there was a lot of other issues with the team that day. But man, it could have made somewhat of a difference. But yeah, last thing we'll talk about, man, this is a long one, but I mean, I guess it's the last one for the season. But last thing to talk about, do you think that the Texans could have the defense was practically flawless, right?
No, but, far from it.
Well,
far from
it. The defense, in terms of like stopping them, right? Like, or at least early, right? We can agree that early on the defense stonewalled the Chiefs a lot of times, right? But Travis Kelce was just left open a lot of times. That's like, when I say nearly flawless, my biggest issue with the defense was just, it seemed like they forgot that Travis Kelce existed. Subtle Taylor Swift reference there. But yeah, it's like they forgot that he existed. And do you think there was maybe some merit to maybe potentially moving Kamari into the nickel and putting him on Travis Kelce, following him more closely, adjusting the scheme? Or do you think that is just a something that was never going to be fixed?
I think that they felt like Azeez Alshayer was the guy for the job. And he was one of their defensive captains. He was their middle linebacker. You know, him and D'Amico are close. You talked about the loyalty thing. I think that played a role into it too. And he was like, look, this guy is going to stop that guy, and we're going to win on the outside, and this is how we're going to beat them. And the numbers bear it out. Like, the two corners were thrown at three times. That there was not a reception out there.
Andy Reid 100% never planned to target them, it looked like.
Nope. Xavier Worthy, they tried to use in the backfield on some gadget stuff, but they were never going to try Kamari Lassiter or Derek Stingley Jr. They were going to win in the middle of the field against Azeez Alshayer, and they did. And Azeez looked lost. I don't know if he was trying to just play a lot of zone, and you know, he got caught in the middle, but it seemed like he got caught in the middle a ton. And that needed to be something that they talked about at halftime, where like, look, forget anyone else in the middle of the football field but Travis Kelce, and make him your sole priority. If Kareem Hunt or Pacheco beat us, you know, in the middle of the field, so be it. But you can't let Travis Kelce just have that game. And they did, and you know, on the fateful touchdown at the end that they caught, Azeez was there, and then he wasn't there, and then he was left on the ground in front of Kelce as he caught the ball.
That was tough to watch.
I hate it for him, because this is a guy that, you know, had the hit thing with Jacksonville, got the wrong end of that deal. I'd never agreed with that. He played really good for the Texans all year long, and this was probably his worst game of the season at the worst time to have it.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, it felt like every time the Chiefs needed Travis Kelce to be open, he was. That was a big difference in the game. I think locking down Travis Kelce probably makes that PAT that Kaimi Fairbairn missed look a lot worse. But like I said, we're not talking about ifs. We're past that. And so speaking to that, yeah, I mean, I think it's time to put it in the rearview mirror. There's a lot to be learned from it. I mean, I'm still processing some of it to some extent, but a lot to talk about this offseason, a lot to watch for from the Texans. And a lot. I mean, just a lot in general. But I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who's listened to the Bullpen this season. It's been a long episode. If you're still here, especially thank you to you for listening this long into the episode, and because that means you're a loyal listener that listens probably pretty regularly to the show, and we appreciate that. It's been a big 2024-2025 season for us. And with that, I know last offseason we kind of rolled straight into offseason content. Tom and I are going to take a bit of a break this season. We're going to probably, you might hear from us if some big news breaks. You can hear from me on the Bleach Report app on Tuesdays and Thursdays. That'll keep going on. I'll be live 2 days a week to as part of Bleach Report's initiative to kind of push daily year-round NFL content. So if you want to hear about the Texans, I'll have something to say over there as I work through this this offseason, figuring out what I think the Texans should do. But yeah, so just thanks for listening. We'll be back. Like I said, if something major happens, we'll probably get together, record something, and put it out. But otherwise, you know, March is probably the earliest you'll hear from us. So yeah, thanks for listening. I have been James Roy, and you can find me at James Roy NFL wherever you do social media, except for TikTok. I know TikTok's back. I might be working on something there. I was anticipating that, so I wasn't really. I haven't been on TikTok in so long. Maybe I'll start putting stuff out on TikTok. Who knows? And then Tom is at Third Coast Tom on Twitter and at TCTom1 on Instagram. And we've been the Bullpen 2024-2025. So yeah, peace out, deuces. As always, stay classy, Houston, and vamos Texans. Thanks for tuning into The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.